So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. Thank you for listening today. The drug of the day is azelastine, but before I get into that, I want to remind you to make sure to go check out reallifepharmacology.com, get your free 31-page PDF on the top 200 drugs. Great little study guide, refresher, a no-brainer to have, certainly. So simply an email, we'll get you access to that, and obviously we'll get you updates when we have new podcast episodes available as well. So go do that at reallifepharmacology.com. All right, so let's pick it up with our drug of the day today, and that is azelastine. Brand name of this medication is Astepro, and this medication has recently received OTC approval, so that's over-the-counter approval. So you may see patients begin to take this medication on their own. So it's important that you know about it and make sure you can educate them about it if they have any questions. So mechanistically, this drug's a nasal spray, and you know, most nasal sprays are typically going to be used for localized symptoms. There are a few exceptions to that, obviously, like Narcan. But anyway, mechanistically, azelastine is an antihistamine. So again, it blocks H1 receptors and ultimately reduces histamine release and histamine effects. So histamine, excessive histamine is associated with allergy symptoms, and of course, allergic rhinitis, so runny nose associated with allergies. And that is going to be the primary use that you're going to see azelastine used. Now, you may see it for non-allergic rhinitis as well. So that's a situation in addition to allergies that you may see it used for. It is typically going to be dosed one or two sprays in each nostril, up to twice a day. And there are a couple different percent solutions. It's 0.1% and 0.15%. Most common one I've seen in practice is 0.15%, and that is what the over-the-counter, approved over-the-counter dosage of Astepro is. With using a nasal spray, the recommendations for azelastine. So when you start using that nasal spray, we do want to prime it or make sure we're actually getting a dose to come out. So usually it takes anywhere between 2 to 6 kind of pumps of the spray, attempting to spray it. So I would say maximum it's probably going to take you is 4 to 6. To get that fine mist to come out. Once you see that fine mist come out of the tip of the nasal spray, you're going to be good to go. That nasal spray is primed for azelastine there. If that medication is not used for a long period of time, generally that's considered 3 days, we're going to want to prime that again and make sure we're getting that light mist to come out. Usually it's only going to take, you know, 1 or 2 pumps to get that if it's been somewhat recently used within the last several days. But again, if it's greater than 3 days, the manufacturer does recommend priming again before inserting into the nostril and giving it a go for the dose. So definitely pay attention to that. It's a good patient education point to ensure they're actually getting the dose that they think they're getting. With a nasal spray, this gives me the opportunity to just go through some important patient education points. So blowing the nose, making sure the nose is clean and clear kind of before giving the dose, because if all that spray gets caught up in mucus and it's blown out after you give the nasal spray, the patient's not getting the dose. So making sure that we're getting that dose of the drug, of azelastine, to the location that we need it in is really, really critical. And you got to make sure that the nostrils are clean. So again, educating, making sure patients blow their nose and clean out their nostril prior to giving the dose. Tilted downward, this is something that I have seen an issue with in patients. I have seen on occasion a patient basically laying down to take their nasal spray. And the big issue with that is you're likely to get a lot of that stuff to run down your throat into your mouth, and it's going to, you know, taste nasty and things of that nature. So, again, have the patient kind of remain upright with that head, with those nostrils head kind of tilting downward. So, again, don't lay down. As you're administering, bring the bottle up to the patient's nose. Keep that bottle upright. Insert it into the nostril, and then we're going to close the other side. Typically, it's done by using a finger and pushing on the other side of the nostril. And as you're inhaling through the nose, then you go ahead, press down on that bottle and release that spray. After the administration, clean the tip with a Kleenex. Obviously, we don't want to be gross and have a bunch of snot and boogers drying up and crusting on there, and obviously more issues down the road with that. So adverse effect profile, probably the thing that you're going to hear patients complain about most is kind of bad aftertaste. So if they get some of that dripping down into the mouth and they can taste it, that is a common complaint. Usually not life-threatening or anything like that, but definitely can be a nuisance for patients. Dry mouth has been reported as well there, and then, you know, irritation, nosebleeds, things from a localized perspective can certainly be reported there as well. Now, systemically, let's talk a little bit about this, and maybe I'll start with kinetics here first. So, bioavailability is approximately 40%. So, does that mean we're going to have systemic effects? And I would say yes, it is possible that you're going to have antihistamine systemic effects. And with antihistamine use, we know they're used for sedation and sleep. That's probably the most likely thing you're going to see is sedation if you do experience systemic effects. Again, I don't think it's incredibly common. It's not something that I've, you know, routinely seen in practice or anything in somebody using azelastine nasal spray. But I think it's important to know that the potential is there. From a metabolism standpoint, that 40% that is bioavailable and potentially absorbed into the systemic circulation, it's actually broken down by a bunch of different enzymes. 1A2, 2C19, 2D6, 3A4, it's a substrate for those. So with that said, having multiple different pathways and low bioavailability in general, and smaller quantities being administered, you're probably not going to run into any CYP interactions or be concerned with that. So I think that's an important point to note, even though there is some metabolism in play with some of those CYP enzymes. So not going to be clinically significant in certainly the overwhelming majority of patients, and generally not something that I worry about. Now, kinetics, talking about onset of action. So this is one potential advantage in the management of allergic rhinitis compared to nasal corticosteroids. So most common one I see in practice is fluticasone for nasal corticosteroids. So antihistamines, nasal antihistamines generally tend to work a little bit quicker. So onset has been reported to be as quick as 15 minutes, whereas nasal corticosteroids, it may take days to actually start seeing a benefit from that nasal corticosteroid. So definitely an important point to remember with that. The primary, getting back, you know, continuing on with kinetics and also tying it into those adverse drug reactions, with antihistamines, that sedation is a possibility. Again, with lower bioavailability, 40%, not large quantities used, are you going to see sedation? Probably not. Incredibly likely that you're going to see it with the use of azelastine nasal spray. But again, something that maybe is important to be aware of in the event that a patient is reporting that type of issue. All right, let's take a quick break from our sponsor and we'll wrap up with drug interactions. If you're in the market for any pharmacist board certification study material like BCPS, NAPLEX, ambulatory care, medication therapy management, or the geriatric exam, go check out meded101.com/store, STORE. Great list of resources there. If you're going through pharmacology classes, Flippin' Pharmacology flashcards on Amazon are available now, available in the United States anyway. Great resource. Lots of people are getting some benefit from those. Good thing to have kind of all throughout your career as a healthcare professional if you've got to take pharmacology classes. So I've covered almost 600 drugs in the packet of those flashcards. So definitely go take advantage of that. It's a great way to support this podcast. All right, let's wrap up with drug interactions. So I mentioned some of the CYP enzymes. I'm not really worried about them clinically. So we can kind of throw those out the window, in my opinion, in general there. The drug interactions that you may likely be able to see, and it's probably not very likely, but if you're going to see some issues, it's probably due to additive effects. So CNS sedation, obviously there's tons of drugs that can add on to that potential effect. Opioids, benzodiazepines, so on and so forth. So azelastine potentially could contribute to that CNS depressant effect. Again, not real high on my priority list when I've got a patient with 20 medications. There's probably 5, 10, 15 medications ahead of azelastine nasal spray that I'm worried about causing sedation. But I just wanted to at least state that for completeness sake. And then dry mouth. I did want to mention this one, you know, antihistamine type effects, maybe some anticholinergic activity. Dry mouth could happen there. And certainly, if we're adding on other medications that that can cause dry mouth that have anticholinergic activity, we could definitely enhance that effect. So some of your older systemic antihistamines, your diphenhydramines, your tricyclic antidepressants, some of your GI medications, dicyclamine, for example, plenty of drugs with anticholinergic activity that could potentially have an additive effect of dry mouth on top of the use of azelastine. All right, well, I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. Do me a huge favor, leave a rating review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Support the sponsor, Flippin' Pharmacology Flashcards, or some of the board certification study materials, and I've got other books as well. All those links you can find, meded101.com/store. And of course, if you've got emails, suggestions, comments, whatever, don't hesitate to shoot me an email, mededucation101@gmail.com, or you can shoot me a message on LinkedIn, Eric Christensen, PharmD, BCPS, BCGP. With that said, thank you so much for listening. Hope you picked up a few practice pearls, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.